9/11. It came and it went. Not a lot of to-do about it. Never in my life, aside from the John F. Kennedy murder, have I seen anything with more holes in it that was put on a national media platform or stage. The 9/11 thing, it just stunk from the first few hours watching these buildings come down and trying to blame it on the fires that were burning. It was laughable. I'm not an engineer, structural or otherwise, but those buildings were dropped. If you've ever watched any other buildings, and most of you have since then, being dropped by demolitions, that's what you saw. Everybody knew it. And yet, look how it went down. The media demanded, we accept it. Most people couldn't do much about it, so they just looked the other way. It's all a lie. Everything's a lie. Everything that comes out of this alleged government now is a lie. 9/11, a tragedy. I've never figured out exactly how many Jews who were employed in those buildings did not go to work that day. It's a very substantial percentage of them, though. There were some who did, but not many. This was an inside job all the way. And I think all of you now, this is ancient history. But we're going to take a look at 9/11 through the eyes of Professor Eric Carlstrom this hour, some of the angles that perhaps some of you haven't considered or even heard about. So let's say hi to Eric. Welcome back. How are you?
We're in the beautiful season here in Crestone, Colorado. September, yeah. No more mosquitoes. Really hard to beat. So, but yeah, this is a topic that has just as much importance now as it did then. Yeah. And of course, it's state sponsored false flag synthetic terrorism. You know, made
state sponsored
in the
all the way, 100%, and not just this state. Let's remember that this came right out of Tel Aviv.
Yes, very good. Yeah, you know, I'm not going to be able to spring too many new things on you, but I think it's very worthwhile to discuss and watch how these things fit together. I was actually building my house here in Crestone, Colorado, on September 11th, 2001, and fortunately I did not have a TV or a radio, so I couldn't be traumatized by watching the buildings fall down and fall down. See, this is all part of traumatic mind control, trauma-based mind control, psychological operation.
Correct.
The media very much in on it. And I had a lady friend at the time who called me up and told me, you know, she was watching it on TV. And she's all she could say is, oh, my God, oh, my God. You know?
And the media was not only in on it. The media was a key primary player. I mean, this was without the media, you got no 9/11. The whole impact was audio video into the minds of the hundreds of millions watching. Go ahead.
Yes, absolutely. Well, your points are excellent. I've got one of about 50 books that I have on this topic. I think it's made. I can't get the title in my head, but to the effect that it's a made for TV movie. That this was a production.
You bet it was, 100%. You bet.
Staged production for the benefit of the world, to traumatize the entire world. And it had many purposes. Of course, as a war trigger event to launch this series of infinite wars. Cheney said it'd be 100 years of wars. And of course, this is what drives the world economy, especially that of the United States. But there were also many, many other objectives in this global war on terrorism, which, of course, is, like you said,
you know, Eric, excuse me, but I want to say one thing. It was a global war on terrorism, but that's a lie. This is a global war on human consciousness. Let's look at the bigger picture here. That whole thing on GWOT, yeah, okay. But the global war on the human mind has never stopped since then. And whether you're an American or not, you watch that, and you were traumatized, unless you were completely apolitical and didn't give a damn. But I don't know how anybody could watch without wincing, at least, and you'll never forget that wince. Go ahead.
I just, we can reminisce because it is such a key element of our lives. Everybody remembers where they were on the day of these quote unquote terror attacks, as well for those of us who are older, the Kennedy assassination, etc. But I was teaching at Cal State University, Stanislaus at the time, going back and forth to my home in Crestone here, where I kind of spent my off months. And one of my students, whose father was a Vietnam vet, said as soon as he saw this on TV, he knew it was the government. He said they did it. It was kind of blasé. Well, I lived through the Vietnam era. You did. We're very, very attuned and immune to government lies. We're very skeptical of official stories, and I think that's where we have to start. Although so many were taken in that it really succeeded in its main purpose, which was to galvanize public support for the invasion of, Afghanistan, Iraq, and all this list of countries in the Middle East. And, of course, all this does is benefit the Greater Israel Project for Israel, as well as keep the American military-industrial complex rolling in the dough. But what I'd like to start with, if you don't mind, is, to bring back to, my perspective.
Yeah, go right ahead, Eric, please.
Yeah,
good.
I knew something was wrong, like you did right away. And being a professor at the time at Cal State University, Stanislaus, I decided to research into this. And there was a lot of fear in the land. And once I wrote a paper about it called Reflections on the Origins of 9/11, Three Scenarios, which I considered the official story, and then the alternative hypotheses that were being put out, I decided to put my name on it. Well, there was a lot of fear in the land, and most people who were writing on these topics did not put their name on anything because there was so much fear of retaliation. And as it turns out, I think that was well justified, because, Jeff, we've talked a lot about the Target Individual Program. The timing of my targeting coincides with the fact that this article of mine, which I wrote in 2002, came out and was distributed around the country online. And the first kind of gang stalking, NATO, CIA, MI6, dirty tricks kind of thing that I recall happened about 2004. And I've read the gang stalking manual, et cetera. So I will speculate here for your benefit and that of your audience that these two things are related, that that one of the reasons why that the 9/11 operation, I call it Operation 9/11, was so insanely ludicrous was they wanted to draw out the truth tellers, isolate them, target them, take them out. So this is part of a larger plan, which is, world control, and that includes mind control, trauma-based mind control, but it also includes all these, quote, counterterrorism operations, including in this country. So, with the Department of Homeland Security, which was formed right 1 year after 9/11, all deliberately staged as kind of the American Stasi, based on the Phoenix program, which we had run in Vietnam, in which we tortured and killed and took out the civilian population of Vietnam that didn't go along with the program of American occupation and dominance and control. Well, really, that same program came back to roost here, the Phoenix program, in the form of this targeted individual program. And there's so much evidence to that effect. Let me just say that I now have 5 websites. One of them is 911nwo.com, in which this article, Reflections on the Origins of 9/11, is on there as one of the early ones. I've got 1,886 posts. I could teach probably 3 or 4 semesters easy
on 9/11. I bet you could. Sure.
And I'd love to do that, actually.
Yep.
But of course, I'd probably... I don't know who would hire me to do that, but if there's anybody out there who wants me to do that, let me know, because all the material's on my website. And then I've got the 4 other websites. So basically, I was part of the 911 truth movement, and I went to a number of these fairly large conferences of 911 truthers, which were held in major cities all over the country. I was one in L.A., one in San Francisco, one in Gilbert, Arizona, one back east, probably five or six. And these were well attended and highly infiltrated. Cass Sunstein, who was in the Obama administration, wrote a book about cognitive infiltration. And he's saying we're going to have to cognitively infiltrate all those, you know, those crazy conspiracy theorists, those 911 conspiracy theorists. Well, of course, this is part of the operation. Anytime you have a huge intelligence operation like this, it's you've got the three major stages. You've got the planning, and Senator Bob Kerry said this is a 30-year plan. He just turned over his shoulder and said that, and he was a military man in Vietnam in the Phoenix program, so he knew about this stuff. And then, of course, the execution, and that's done by all segments of the government, as we'll get into, but especially the military and special operations, et cetera, and the interagency, as we'll get into. And then you have the cover-up, and we have been involved in the cover-up ever since, just like the cover-up of 9/11 and the cover-up of the Kennedy assassination, ongoing. So imagine the resources that are put into these things. But on the other hand, look at all the resources they're getting back. The military has a boondoggle now. The war on terror, quote-unquote, terrorism, as it should be in quotes, because, you know, one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter, right? I mean, if I consider myself a freedom fighter for America by telling the truth, and most of the other 911 truthers, I'd put that in the same category. But we could be taken up by, you know, the Department of Homeland Security or anybody related to that operation, FBI, and put on the terrorism watch list. They'll say, we're the terrorists, and now the whole counterterrorism apparatus of the nation, which is multi-trillion-dollar operation, is levied against us as the enemy non-combatants. So it's a very, very complete and insidious system that targets American citizens. Of course, we saw with 9/11 is going to change everything. We lost our, you know, due process of law, our civil liberties, our habeas corpus. Now, anybody can be regarded as a terrorism. And by the way, terrorists are not afforded any rights. They don't even have the rights of soldiers in battle, enemy soldiers in battle. If you're enemy, so they can do anything to you. And of course, that's
basically correct.
They've been tortured.
No accountability. Nothing will be done to them. No, they get a ticket to ride, most of them. Free pass.
And of course, and all this, again, 30, 40 years in the making. Cheney and Rumsfeld, you know, they started in 1967 doing pilot studies on universal basic income. And they're, you know, globalist New World Order guys. And they were doing the studies for continuity of government way back in the 60s and 70s as well, which was imposed for the first time ever. Guess what day? September 11, 2001.
What a coincidence, huh?
We went into continuity of government. The government was actually run in Cheyenne Mountain, according to this, to the work of historian Dr. Webster Tarpley, who's written a book that I refer to. It's called 911 Synthetic Terror Made in USA. And he's the guy who, in his fifth edition, which came out in 2012, identified 46 military drills, military exercises that involved just about every aspect of the Operation 9/11 that just happened to flip live, go live on the day of 9/11.
Now, that's Webster at his best. That's really essential journalism. That's great, great work for that.
It is. It is. That's a slam dunk. And he's got the names of them. He's got a table.
Yeah.
People can go on to my website. And, well, you've listed the articles that I sent
there
you.
Six articles under Eric's name and guests. You can find them there and in his columnist section.
Yeah, Inside Job and Yet Much More is the name. The 46 Drills, Operations, War Games, and Exercises of 9/11 features my transcription of an interview that Webster Tarpley did with a woman named Bonnie Faulkner at Guns and Butter in 2016, which I'm glad, really glad I transcribed that, because it's been taken off the internet. I can't find it now, but I transcribed it. So it's on there.
Good job.
And here's, I mean, you know, sometimes you just know that these things are going to disappear. And I've, some of my best posts are things that have been removed from the internet, because, of course, we're living in a uber-valence society now. So anyway, among the revelations of Tarpley's research are that Operation 9/11 was very much a product of the American business, military, and government establishment, and the list of participating agencies in this top-secret operation is mind-boggling, including the White House and Vice President Cheney, who I mentioned, NORAD, North American Aerospace Defense Command, that's in Cheyenne Mountain, 90 miles from where I live in Crestone here. That's where the continuity of government was located, and that's where a group of military people or ex-military people or business people working with military were putschists, as Webster Tarpley says. They're the ones that are conducting this operation and inserting false blips, radar blips, into the screens of air traffic controllers. Completely confused, you know. I mean, it was total chaos on the day. He says the CIA and the DIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency, the Pentagon, Army, Navy, Air Force, New York City Fire and Police Departments. By the way, also Giuliani, who within a few days sold off 1.5 million tons of debris from the fallen World Trade Center off to China, thus contaminating.
Oh, I don't remember that. I vaguely remember it. I had completely forgotten about that. That's interesting. Why? Why didn't people pay more attention to that? And why haul all that junk, that debris, to China?
Well,
crazy.
They wanted to get rid of the crime scene and the evidence. And
Number one, but I mean, why would the Chinese take it? That's weird to me.
Well, we have a very interesting relationship with China. You know, I mean, they're still making our Apple computers and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
But also Giuliani is, according to, see, this is the kind of thing we delved into in all these conferences, all the minutiae. But he also is guilty. He was forewarned. He knew what was going to happen. He did not tell the first responders, the firemen, et cetera, over 100, 200 of which have died from health problems, you know, from all the, you know, contamination from their working at the site at the day. So he's actually criminally responsible for this murder of, you know, well over 3,000 people, or at least one of the many co-conspirators. So the mayor of New York City, his office, FEMA, you know, they were doing drills in New York City on the day of that involved falling buildings. I mean, you couldn't make this stuff up. The FBI, the Coast Guard, Pennsylvania, local first responders and emergency managers, the FAA, of course, Federal Aviation Administration, the U.S. Department of Transportation, of course, the Canadian government, thank you, and as well as 40 other agencies, which Tarpley identifies as part of the interagency. So this cross-cutting of agencies was obviously very well planned. And as Tarpley also points out, and this I think I mentioned last time in response to this topic, was false flag state-sponsored terror events like this kind of have a structure, and that would be that you have certain people in government who are in the know, the moles. Doesn't have to be everybody. It isn't everybody. And then you've got your patsies who are groomed, like the 19 hijackers and Mohammed Atta, and, of course, Osama bin Laden, who had nothing to do with it, of course, and said so.
And they've never changed their M.O. Look at Crooks, another patsy. Come on.
That's right.
Just
yeah.
Keep right on rolling.
Yeah, so you got the moles, you got the patsies, and you got the professional killers. Professional killers are CIA assassins, special operations forces, military people, etc. So, you know, sorry, people, wake up. We're not, you know, we're not talking about Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny anymore. We're not talking about the cover stories. We're talking about reality. And so much of what has happened, I think, over the last century, after the Protocols of the Elders of Zion, was a war plan that was rolled out with a war strategy, is to get people not to be able to distinguish between fantasy and reality. And their very first protocol is, we will use force and make-believe to take over the world. Well, can you think of a better description of Operation 9/11 than force and make-believe?
That takes the cake. You got it.
That's exactly what it was. It was force and make-believe. And still, and so if they can get us not to be able to distinguish fantasy from reality, they've got us where they want us, and they can move us any way they want. And they get what they want, which is the world. You know, we want the world, and we want it now. And it's been a long-term plan, and this is where it's all starting to fit together for me. 9/11, the targeted individual program. The Kalerji plan of flooding refugees and immigrants into the European white Christian nations in order to destroy the white Christian culture.
So what they're doing, they're pretty well got it done. They're well over halfway now, in my view. Go ahead.
Yeah, and how do you get those people to want to leave their countries? War. So since 9/11, the U.S. military has invaded, according to an article I just came up with called Creating Refugees, Displacement Caused by the United States Post-9/11 Wars. This is by a anthropology professor at the American University in Washington, D.C. named David Vine. These wars include 26 wars, now if you count Gaza and Ukraine now as well, which have been spawned by 9/11. So the 9/11 false flag, synthetic, state-sponsored terror event has changed everything, turned America into an uber police state, but it has allowed the U.S. military and its partners, of course, to prosecute these wars, which certainly benefit Israel in the sense of helping it to expand into the greater Israel, Eretz Israel, from the Nile to the Euphrates, which has been the plan all along, but also to break up these other countries, to destabilize them through terror and war, and then get them out of those countries and then pay them with Soros money and other NGOs to come into Europe and the United States. So this is a connection that I really didn't make, Jeff, until just preparing for this little discussion and discovering this paper. Let me just read what it says here. This is David Vine's paper, Creating Refugees. You see how it all fits together. The U.S. post 9/11 wars have forcibly displaced at least 37 million people in and from Afghanistan, Iraq, Pakistan, Yemen, Somalia, the Philippines, Libya, and Syria. Okay, those are eight that they chose out of 24 that they could have chosen, which are post 9/11 American wars of terror, not on terror, of terror. And it says this exceed, and you see, that's a very conservative estimate. Probably it could well be up to 59 million. This exceeds those displaced by every war since 1900, except World War II. And it could be closer to 48, 59 million that are displaced. This global war on terror has allowed the U.S. military to wage war continuously for almost two decades. In 24 countries, as I said, has done incalculable damage for civilians and combatants, for U.S. military personnel and their family members. We've got 31,000 homeless veterans now in America, so they're casualties as well for entire societies. Deaths and injuries number in the millions. And like other wars throughout history, the U.S. post 9/11 wars have caused millions of people, the vast majority civilians, to fear for their lives and flee in search of safety. See, we don't think about that, do we? Oh, those terrible, you know, Somalians coming into Europe. Well, guess what? You know, they're bombed, probably, you know, bombed out of their nations, you know, by the post 9/11 U.S.-driven military
force. Africa's second leading industry is probably death and dying, unplanned or otherwise. Seriously, it's a killer. People are getting killed there all the time. It's kind of cultural when you think about it.
Well, the CIA has got its own...
Well, but who creates their culture? It's the people like the involved with the international intel agencies. They go in there and they start these horrible wars of mass death. Look at Zim. What was it? Uganda. Idi Amin. I mean, look. Come on, look at all those things. How many people? The Hutsis and the Tutsis. How many die there in Africa? People die there all the time.
The Ibus anyway. And yeah. Well, of course, all of that is highly organized.
Go back to the Zulus if you want. Whatever.
Yeah, this is highly organized by the CIA, MI6, etc. This is how they break countries apart. They balkanize them in terms of different tribal ethnicities, and then they start a feud. They might even throw in electromagnetic frequencies to, raise the rage rate, as they did in Crimson Tide, Operation Crimson Tide in Rwanda. So these things are organized, and the CIA and its high-tech destabilizing techniques are central to it. Each one of these stories, I think, would be, if we investigate, we'll find the CIA, MI6 at the center of it. They on a tribal level, they might have fought in the past, but these have been exacerbated to break up the countries. And of course, that makes their resources that much more easy to get at. And here's the stats: 5.3 million Afghans, representing 26% of the pre-war population, displaced.
Right, right.
3.7 million Pakistanis, 3.7% of pre-war population. 4.4 million Yemenis, 24% of pre-war population. Do you ever hear this on the news? Nobody gives a damn about these people. 4.2 million Somalis, 46% of pre-war population. 1.7 million Filipinos, 2% of pre-war population. 9.2 million Iraqis, that's a big one. We've killed over a million Iraqis. 37% of pre-war population in the two wars, 1991, the Gulf War, and then in 2003 and onward. 1.2 million Libyans, 19% of the pre-war population. 7.1 million Syrians, 37% of the pre-war. All these are neocolonial wars, and the U.S. and Britain and their allies are central to it. So, on the one hand, I'm saying, oh, this is Jewish driven to destroy the European countries. On the other hand, it's the U.S. and the European countries that are doing it. So it's very, very, confusing.
It isn't. Let's take it one step further. But who's controlling the U.S.? Who's controlling most European states? It's the same people. So no matter where you go, you end up at the same location.
That is the resolution to this apparent contradiction. Exactly.
Yeah.
Then he says U.S. forces have been involved in relatively limited but still significant ways in countries including Burkina Faso, Cameroon, Central African Republic, Chad, Democratic Republic of the Congo, Kenya, Mali, Mauritania, Niger, Nigeria, Saudi Arabia, relatively related to the war in Yemen, South Sudan, Tunisia, and Uganda. In most of these countries, the U.S. military, often with allied European forces, has backed national governments' counterinsurgency campaigns and counterterrorism operations. Of course, counterterrorism is terrorism. I mean, these are the linguistic tricks.
Thank
that
you.
They use.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Operations.
There's a semantic war on people too. Let's not forget that. That's part of the game.
Most of the gang stalking, which I think is rampant in this country, carried right. on with your taxpayer money, is flying under the name of counterterrorism. So you have all these government agencies with units that involve in counterterrorism. Well, they have to have lists of suspected terrorists, right? So they get these lists with the FBI, and we talked about that. So, but what they're doing is not terrorism, it's counterterrorism. But in fact, they're doing terrorism. So there's the semantic trick. Anyway, these are operations against quote-unquote Islamicist militants and other insurgents, quote unquote, with the deployment of combat troops, drone strikes and surveillance, military training, arms sales, and other pro-government aid. In many of these conflicts, U.S.-backed government counter-terror campaigns have resulted in human rights abuses of their own civilians. Yeah, this is exactly the gang stalking program.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. This is a military.
It just boggles the mind, really. You can't believe this is all happening, but it is.
It's destroying itself. We're absolutely destroying ourselves. And of course, like
we're being led. We're being led to destroy ourselves. We wouldn't elect this. They could have left things pretty much on the trajectory they were in the 1950s. They didn't have to change everything. They could have left it ride for another 10, 20, 30 years. Look what they did. So we're being led up the gallows. That's what we're being done.
Exactly. And that, Jeff, is why I stuck in higher education, because I knew that my students were not stupid, but they were not well educated. They were propagandized. So I always gave them the benefit of the doubt and said, okay, these are smart people. They need to be informed. And I feel the same way about the American people. You know, even despite all the drugs and all the violence and all the things that work against the human brain processing and comprehending all this information, I think people are smart. And given the information, they can make the right decision. So that's hopefully what we're doing.
Given the information, honestly, objectively, truthfully, they can usually make the right decision. But all that's off the table now because they're fed constant mind control and propaganda, as you know better than anybody. They don't have a chance. They're addicted to their screens 4.5 hours a day on the average for everybody in this country. We call them children or adults. I don't care. It's hard to tell the difference. But you've got 40% of America is obese, not fat or overweight, obese. So how does this all add up? It adds up to the end of a culture and the death of a society and a race because of the injections. We've got 80% plus of Americans have been given the genetic death weapon. This is a genocide. There's no argument about it now. No, you can't. Go ahead, please. I'm interrupting.
No, everything you're saying is spot on because this is all related to the same program. And let me just give you some quotes that I think kind of might surprise and shock, but also explain. This is the first quote that I have on the homepage of my 911NWO.com website, the one that we're talking about, and that's 911NWO.com. I always have lots and lots of quotes because I like other people to tell the story for me. Anyway, in the Zohar HaKadosh, which is one of the sacred texts of Judaism, the Talmud and the Zohar much more sacred than the Old Testament or the Pentateuch, as they call it, the five. The rabbis don't take that seriously. But in the Zohar HaKadosh, which is really a system, the Kabbalah, and that's the system of Babylonian black magic, Satan. Right. In the Zohar HaKadosh, you will find there an extraordinary information. There will be two big buildings in the land of Edom, which today we relate the word Edom to America. Oops. And those are the biggest, tallest buildings in the world, and they will be brought down completely. And that will be the sign of beginning of tremendous wars that will end only in the coming of the Mashiach, which is the Jewish Messiah and the Christian Antichrist, by the way. 1 week, and then he'll kick ass. He'll be the son of perdition, according to the Christians. And then we're going into Armageddon. 1 week before 9/11, one of the great rabbis in Israel, this is the same quote, Hasidi Shobai, he came with some people, some of his disciples, in a car, and they were coming towards the evening, the time of Mincha, the prayer of the afternoon. He said, please, can you stop right here? I want to daven, to pray Mincha here. They prayed Mincha with Minyani in front of everybody passing in Manhattan near the World Trade Center. After he finished the prayer, he said, say bye-bye to those buildings because you are not going to see them no more. This is by Rabbi Benjamin Ben Haim.
Who did he say that to, Eric? Do you remember? Who's quoting him?
Actually, there is an excellent series of three videos called You Are Amalek.
Okay.
This goes back to the Amalekites in the Bible that were the enemies of the Jews. And this guy named, it must be a false name. He claims to be a historian and a psychologist, made this three movies in which he quotes all these rabbis. He actually has them making the statement on the film. And this is So it's called, I can send you the link to that very interesting series, You Are Amalek. And of course, Bibi Netanyahu recently got up there and was saying, it was justifying the genocide in Gaza by saying, you know, he's quoting Samuel 15:3 or whatever, saying, you know, go attack the Amalekites and wipe them out and kill all the women and children and donkeys and cattle and sheep and, you know, this kind of scorched earth mentality of genocide, which the Jews seem to revel in. And
rebel,
scary thing,
correct word. And if you want to see the face of one of Satan's own, look at that. Look at Netanyahu. Just look at him. Watch him. And then look at our alleged Congress giving him 58 standing ovations. You want to puke? That's not America. That is not America. Go ahead.
That was horrific for me as well to watch that. It's very, very sad. And that who that but demonstrative of who owns and runs the country. These are lapdogs for the Zionist Jews in Congress on both sides of the aisle. They were all standing up 58 times out of 60 minutes, all standing up for this mass murderer.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Who justifies the, I don't know how many are killed now, 40,000 they say out of 2.5 million, but I imagine that, okay, most of these people are going to be homeless refugees now. Many of them are going to be brought to America, just like in these other cases, as part of the same clergy plan. And we're going to pay
thing.
For it.
Right.
We're going to pay for it. I mean, now we see the pattern. We see the pattern. We're puppets. Our leaders are puppets ushering in the Protocols of Zion plan for total Jewish domination of the world in which, well, as Rabbi Olvadeh or whatever, is, you know, has said, you know, Goyim are only fit to serve Jews. I mean, that's our only purpose for existence.
If I might, I think most of you listening understand that you're hearing the truth here. There's no exaggeration. There's no hyperbole. This is just a simple statement of fact by Professor Carlstrom. We've said many of the same things over all these decades. And I would examine the leadership of the world under the same microscope if they were Hindus or all Irishmen. I don't care. I want to know who's running the show. And in this case, and for a long time, like a couple thousand years, planning and plotting to do exactly that is that same group of people. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I mean, again, I have no innate biases against anybody. In fact, I think I've got anything in my family, we were brought up not to be prejudiced against, to bend over backwards to not be like that, you know. But when you start studying and you start to see these patterns over and over again, and like we were just saying, when you start to see a bloodthirsty people that revels in mass murder, I mean, the Book of Esther is, you know, it's all about vengeance, and, you know, Holocaust means the Hebrew word is Shoah, which means burnt offering. Burnt offering to who? Well, their God, Satan. The murder of innocent civilians to them is a burnt offering to their god, Satan. Okay.
Inarguable. You can't argue it. It's just fact. It's a fact. It's not a wish. It's not a hope. It's a fact. Go ahead.
We don't want this to be the way it is, but this is the way it is. And if we don't, I mean, you know, there is an America Doomsday Plan, which is a little bit like, you know, the movie Dr. Strangelove, where, you know, they have a plan to put the soldiers and the president and the high politicians in these underground bunkers and then just let everybody else, you know, get slaughtered by the nuclear fallout.
That's right.
Mount Weather, Cheyenne, man, these places exist underground. And it could be that what the Jews really want is the total destruction of Edom, which they refer to as America. And in fact, there's so many quotes to that effect in this series I was just telling you about called You Are Amalek. They have their own kind of, you know, vocabulary, and this is coming from the rabbis. And by the way, the Hasidic saying is because Satan couldn't be everywhere at once, he invented rabbis. Here's one rabbi shown in that, and I just transcribed this, what he's screaming. Rabbi 4, there Amalek's suffering will only be equal to that of the cursed one, Jesus. The Talmud, that's their sacred book, says the founder of Christianity has been sentenced to boil in feces, excrement from the bowels of humans, cats, dogs, lions, and tigers, boiling and bubbling feces. That's where Jesus Christ is right now. That's how he's punished every waking moment. These are nice guys. That's the Talmud. You forgot to mention that, huh? All the churches and all their crosses, that big statue on the mountain in Brazil, blown to smithereens for all the world to see. These rabbis, you know, what's 10,000 rabbis at the bottom?
They are driven and fueled, most of them, by hate.
Yeah. Yeah, here's Rabbi 5, 2:22. You'll pay dearly for it, Europeans, to such an extent you have no idea. You'll have no place to run. When Italy is gone, when Edom, America, Christianity's headquarters, that comes from Esau, is there, when that place is gone, that's what Islam is going to do. Islam is the broom of Israel. You have to know it. So instead of having us do the job, he sends Ishmael to solve the problem. When he cleans all this, in other words, kills all the Americans, the wine will come back home for the coming of the Mashiach. That's their Antichrist Messiah.
This is all sick stuff. Yeah.
Well, this is the world we live in. Yeah, you know it. This war in the world we live in is necessary so that Israel does not enter the war. Why is it necessary? Because one is going to use the other so that Israel does not enter the war, said the rabbi Raphat Isram, and this will cause Ishmael to rise against Islam so they could destroy Christianity and Islam. What you're going through in France and Europe, which is scary, for us it's the most beautiful news of our Jewish history. Finally, we begin to approach it. Finally, we begin to realize what the sages had predicted before. What I said is in the Sanhedrin. The Mashiach will only come when Edom, America, Europe, and Christianity fall completely. So I'm asking the question, is it good news that Islam is invading Europe? It's excellent news. It's announcing the arrival of the Mashiach. Okay, this is their 3,000-year plan. Happening. And so this is not a series of
random... It's all available. Eric is presenting these. There's so much more. He's such a brilliant researcher. All of this is in print. It's not fiction. It's not rumor. This is how these people think. And unfortunately, for the goyim, they can't get that through their head. It's not presented to them often enough for them to really assimilate it, but it's there, it's truthful, no exaggeration. They hate us. We don't rank, and we're being smeared out of existence by their plans. This is the truth. Go.
Yeah, well, Jeff, as you know, if you're, again, you don't start out with this bias because, well, Jews are very successful. In many cases, they're very smart. They're very, you know, artistic and great musicians, blah, 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 and have reached high levels of accomplishment. But, gradually the scales do fall from one's eyes. And, of course, Jesus knew what was going on, and he said in John 8:44, ye are of your father the devil, and his lust ye will do. He was a liar from the beginning, and the father of lies, and a murderer. So, Jesus knew what was going on. Most of us go through life without figuring it out. Some of us do. A lot of blacks have figured it out because they are so exploited.
Isn't that interesting? I wouldn't say the depth of it is particularly profound. It doesn't need to be. They simply need to look at the basic facts, and they connect the dots. It's right there.
Yeah. Yeah, this is visceral. I mean, you know when you're being screwed over.
Right.
And this is exactly it. But what I was leading up to is that, again, having been around for a while, I've had many Jewish friends and girlfriends, for that matter, and very, very impressive sometimes and wonderful. But you, after a while, you realize, uh-oh, there's something else happening here. So what I'm
saying
is... Isn't
that the truth? Well said. There's always something going on in the background. Yes.
Yeah, they can be very friendly. They can be charming. Right. They can be wonderful lovers, you know. I mean, all these things. But there's something else going on in the background, and you might never figure out what it was until it's too late.
Too late.
You've been skunked, you know. And the great Nikola Tesla, probably the greatest scientist of all time, had this to say. He said, "Never trust a Jew."
Did he actually say, is that a quote? That's interesting.
Yeah, that's
I'm sure it would be, or you wouldn't say it, but I've never come across that. That's interesting. I wonder what else he said. He's right.
Well, again, you know, this is the sort of thing you learn. You learn from hard experience. You learn from getting, you know, the short end, realizing that things aren't the way you thought they were. It's a very hard lesson. But they're tribal. Bottom line is the only thing that really matters to Jews is Jews. And everything else is to be manipulated to the advantage
of
that group or individuals within that group. So it's a war. And this is where we are at a disadvantage. You know, my friendship with these people or this person would not be based on an underlying war of you know, one-upsmanship.
Fair enough.
Victory,
what it is.
Whereas theirs would be. In other words, this is the underlying agenda is they want to beat you, and they want to take what you got. That's no fun. I mean, that's not a good friend. You know, that's a bad friend. That's an enemy in disguised as a friend. So what I'm trying to pass
it's kind of like dual citizenship, if you think about it in that regard. The two things running parallel, and one of them is not good for you at all. Friendship is one thing, but the ulterior motive, not good. Go.
Exactly. The ulterior motive is we want your stuff, and we want you to die, or we want you to be our slave. You know, and of course the mind control technologies now are so far advanced that this is the most insidious part of all of this, is that you know, we've talked so much, and I'm tremendously grateful to you for offering this platform, and I get letters of gratitude from TIs that, you know, thank me for speaking out on this, you know, but what they want is total individual control. They want to control the mind and the behavior of people so they can turn humans into biorobot slaves. Well, if you ask me, that is crossing the Rubicon into total evil. Each person, I believe, is a creature of God and has great potential. The opposite view of the controllers, who in this case are of that tribe, predominantly, would be, okay, we want to utilize that person for our own ends. That person has no intrinsic value as a person because they're just cattle or goyim or insects or whatever. So this is the sickest and most difficult part to understand, that they regard humans as no better than bugs, you know, or non-Jews. And we have to wake up to that fact that these people have, what they have in mind for us is death and slavery. Total control. And therefore, I mean, what do we do? Do we have, you know, do we have a survival instinct? Did we make it through 100, 200,000 years of surviving the elements of nature? Do we have any of that left?
Uh-huh.
I hope there's some Americans out there who have the survival instinct and skills, intellectual as well as physical, to beat the satanic onslaught. Unfortunately, I'm seeing people like Alex Jones kind of herd people in kind of the wrong direction. He gets a lot of patriots worked up, but his allegiances are questionable, I think, you know.
So, I think you're 100% on the mark. I agree. And it's very good. He's very shrewd. These people are very, very good at doing what they're supposed to do. They would not be in those positions if they were not controlled and or massively influenced by the hidden hand of power. They wouldn't be there. Understand that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I get fooled. I mean, this is part of the living experience, you know, especially working in these topics, and especially being a targeted individual. My gosh, you know, you're up against the intelligence agencies and this tribe, you know, and they've got every trick in the book. And so it's a process of learning from your failures, your mistakes. You're being duped. I was a big fairly big Alex Jones fan for quite a while till I saw, you know, him make some very, very obvious lies. And I thought, well, you know, Alex is smart enough to know that that's not true. So what's his angle? You know, he's a very smart guy, very shrewd, but he's got an agenda. And he has completely blocked out, for instance, the targeted individual phenomena, claiming it doesn't exist. So I've seen him shut down targeted individuals who call in. And see, once you know a few facts like that, you realize he's working for somebody. You know, he's aligned with somebody. Yeah.
Right. They all are. Everybody that's highly visible and is in a position of power or genuine influence is controlled to one degree or another, if not outright created and then deployed and controlled. This is all part of the mechanism of dominance and domination. These people don't play games. They own the media. Alt and MSM, it doesn't matter anymore. They own it all. There are very few independent voices left of any substance. Well, go ahead. Last comment, Eric. We had about 30 seconds.
Well, thank you so much, Jeff. You know, I think we pulled together a lot of threads here. And
yes, for myself indeed.
And for others, you know, I mean, it's pulling these things together and seeing the larger patterns. Because you can get bogged down, you know, how did the World Trade Center come down? You know, was it in the building bombs? Was it the mini nukes? Was it directed energy weapons? And you can get lost in that rabbit hole, you know. But if you can see the bigger picture and seeing who's right. going for total domination and what their weapons are, and then the question is, how do we survive? How do we take back our
How do
our
we humanity? Survive? First of all, we have to prepare to survive. Then we have to worry about taking it back somehow. But survival is essential now. It's at the front door knocking. You better prepare. I'm telling you, things are going to get real bad here, and they're bad already. At any rate, we'll talk soon, Eric. Thank you for all your research. Thank you for your honesty, your integrity, and for telling it straight. It's great to hear.
It's fantastic to be able to do that. We were honored in that sense. And I hope people are going to be processing some of this and sharing it and, pray to God, but keep rowing to shore.
Keep rowing. Okay, my friend. Thanks
so much. Yeah, good night.
All right. Professor Eric Carlstrom. All right, that is our program for you this Thursday. We'll pause for about 21 hours. Come right back tomorrow night. Lots more. Be safe out there. Take care.